It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Good morning. Welcome into the Insiders. I am James Hamm. Joining me in the booth today is Jesse Tapio.
We're in here.
We've got Jesse. What's up, dude?
Nothing much. I'm always excited when I get to fill in, too.
Really?
There's an aspect of, like, I love this job and stuff like that, so I do get pretty amped and energized, like, as soon as we get into this.
Okay, so I always wonder, because I'm someone who, like this is what I do, but what is it like for you? Are you like, oh, man, I got to fill in today? Or are you like, no, this is awesome?
No, like, sometimes, you're tired sometimes or whatever, but, like, just mainly it's all just, like, it's awesome and stuff like that. Because, like, this job is fun, so it's like, I try to stay, like, grateful for it, you know?
It is fun. Yeah, and I think staying grateful for it, like, that's totally the way that I've always looked at this. Like, I've always told my wife, the moment that I don't enjoy covering the Sacramento Kings every day, then I won't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's so taxing on, like, every aspect of your life. Like, I've sat there and watched games and done game recaps from a soccer field. Like, literally, while my son is playing on the soccer field.
You're watching U12 soccer or whatever at the time. It's like, oh, I got to talk about Francisco Garcia or whatever.
Yeah, and seriously, watching games and then writing recaps while watching games on my screen, on the field, and then having to write. And, you know, there are so many times where you're out to dinner with your wife, and she's like, why do you have your laptop? And it's like, you know why I've got my laptop.
Yeah.
And then halfway through dinner, something breaks and I'm literally writing at the dinner table at a nice restaurant. And then I hand my laptop to my wife who edits everything. Shout out to Sarah.
Shout out to the significant others in this field.
Yes. Yeah. The significant others. There's a couple of things I tell young reporters, right? So if you want to do this game, right? First of all, learn how to eat. Because if you don't learn how to eat, and again, at my age, I've been doing a horrible job of it, like maybe the last year and a half. And I've not fallen through with my own principles, which is bad. But if you don't learn how to eat, like I know people get annoyed with me when I talk to them about this. And I remember Logan Murdoch. I told him when he came on at NBC and he was going to partner with Monty Poole.
Yeah. Right?
And I'm like, hey, man, the biggest advice I'll tell you is be careful about your diet because it's the worst job. Like you get out at midnight and you're driving home and
we don't work normal hours.
No, you look over and there's Taco Bell and you're thinking I had media dinner at like 6 o'clock. That was like 6 hours ago.
Could really go for a Crunchwrap right now.
Right. And that's what happens.
Yeah. You stop. No, I get it.
You're in line in the middle of the night and at Taco Bell.
Yeah, it's 1 o'clock in the morning and here's James Hamm at Taco Bell.
That's right. You pull up to the window and they're like, hey, what's going on? Good game tonight. You're like, thanks, I need my Taco Bell fix.
Yeah, I'm telling you. You want the usual, James?
That's right. So it becomes like this brutal cycle where you're always like trying to figure things out. And I remember Logan came to me about like a year later and he's like, dude, I have gained so much weight. Like right off the bat, it's a brutal lifestyle. Like, especially for people who are traveling everywhere, you'll see a lot of beat writers are totally unhealthy. They let the job overrule like their basic life and add into that, like having a family and everything else. So I've always appreciated it, but I've also been like, okay, look, there's a tipping point for everyone where you're like, okay.
I feel like that's every job too.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But my job, like to cover a team like this, I don't think people think it's like there are so many people who like give their right arm to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're always like, okay, I understand that. And I'm like very well aware that it's a dream job for like a million people
mm-hmm.
or more, you know, people who never, you wouldn't even think that you'd want to do this job until you get into it. And you're like, okay, this is crazy. So anyway, I like not to get sidetracked, but we got sidetracked, Jesse, right off the bat.
It's all good, bro. 1320. We do sidetracking all the time. Yeah.
Yesterday we got sidetracked a lot, Jesse.
Did you guys?
No, not us.
Oh, you're talking on the show on D'Lo and KC.
On D'Lo and
KC. That was wild. As soon as Kenny walked up to the bathroom, the show was cooked after that.
The show was cooked.
Yeah, it was over.
I don't know
and,
if anyone...
And the fact that he comes back and his mic just cuts, like, it's just dead after that, which is hilarious.
Yeah, just absolutely wild.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so welcome into The Insiders. I'm James Hamm. Jesse Tapia is joining me. We are, of course, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. The great Kyle Madsen is out today, tomorrow, and Monday, celebrating his lovely bride's birthday. So shout out to the Madsens. And I believe if you're at Disneyland, just search for Kyle.
Yeah.
He told me what he was going to wear, and I'm not going to tell everybody what he was going to wear, but... Like, he's a Disney dude. Like, you've seen his tattoos.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he's a fan. So when he goes to Disneyland...
Yeah, he goes all out.
He doesn't just show up, like, in an insider sweatshirt. No.
Makes sense. He's probably got, like, the Mickey ears or something.
I think he's got the whole... Like, he's got a whole look.
You
got
to do it up. When you go to the amusement parks or whatever, you're going to go and pay all that money. You got to do it up.
I guess. I don't know that I could walk into
Disneyland. I'm not putting on the ears, but I'll... Like, we can Disney it up a little bit.
I think he's got a fit. He's got a whole entire fit. Like,
shout out to our guy, Kyle Madsen.
Yeah, shout out to Kyle. So I don't think I am doing that at all, but that's okay. Jesse, we have a huge, huge game for you tonight.
Yeah, as far as this, it's just 5 hours, 6 hours of my day I need to get through so I can get home and watch the game.
Yeah, you don't care about what's happening today. You just want to wait for tonight, right?
Oh, yeah.
What is the biggest thing you're looking forward to? For those who don't know, Jesse is a huge Miami Dolphins fan. He's got his Dolphins sweatshirt on.
We've been miserable for about 25 years. This is the year, though.
Yeah, and the worst part is you weren't even around to see, like, the near glory.
Yeah, no, Marino literally was done as I was, like, I don't even have recollection of Marino. I was born in 96, but, like, Jay Fiedler was the first quarterback I ever remember for the Dolphins, and he stunk. Don't even bring it up, James.
So you lived through the Chad Pennington.
Yes, I went through Chad Pennington is literally the best quarterback of my franchise, if not for Tua.
Oh, no, that's horrible. Yeah, I definitely... you know, I grew up in a different era, and some of my best memories are of the 84 Super Bowl.
Yeah.
With Marino against Montana, and just, like, it just incredible.
Yeah, because my family, like, my uncles and my dad, like, they're Dolphins fans and stuff, so they got to watch Marino and all that, and we tell them, like, why did you guys do this to us? Because as soon as he left, it's been all bad for us since, like, my cousins and all that.
Even for years, he was the best quarterback in the league, but he just couldn't win.
Yeah.
And I mean, just like absolutely brutal. Like I remember watching, you know, like all of it. Like my brother's a huge Miami Dolphins fan, and so you know, Mark Layton, Mark Duper, but yeah. You know, Jimmy Cephalo. And,
my first dog's name was Duper.
Oh,
yeah, okay. It was Duper. Shout out Duper.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so what are you looking forward to tonight? Because this is a big game for them.
Honestly, I'm simply put, don't get your ass kicked by the Bills again. I think they're 1-11, I think, in their last 12 against Buffalo.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's bad, James.
So this is like Domantas Sabonis and Anthony Davis?
Precisely.
Oof.
Yes, it's bad. Like, Josh Allen is Domantas Sabonis when it comes to the Miami Dolphins, and we're Anthony Davis.
Oh, that's not good.
So honestly, like, that's what I'm looking for. Like, you got to, like, just prove that you can hang with these guys finally.
After watching week one of the Miami Dolphins, I talked to Kyle about this. First of all, I'm not sure I'm down with your head coach's his look, like what he's got going on.
What do you mean? He's always styled out.
I think he's definitely like living the
Miami lifestyle a bit.
The Miami lifestyle.
I believe it. I can see that.
So he definitely looks like he's having a good time.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't like that the screen passes. It was like,
yeah,
every single play was a wide receiver screen for, you know, and sometimes it worked, but a lot of times it didn't, and it just felt like, are you going to let Tua actually throw, or is this what we're doing?
Well, I think the Jags were taking a lot of the middle of the field away from them. They couldn't run the ball at all that game. So I think they were kind of taking what they could get. Also, you're missing, like, they have Waddle and Hill, but the receivers after that, a lot of them are all banged up.
Okay.
So they're kind of working with what they got right now. But, yeah, I'd like to see them open it up a little bit more today.
Yeah. Me and Kyle last week, we kind of got into this discussion about the fact that the Thursday Night Football opening week was like one of the best games. It could be one of the best games of the year, right? And we're kind of the opinion that maybe you don't want to have that game be the first game of the season, and because you want to see the Chiefs and the Ravens more like mid-season when they're both at like their top form. But we were wrong. I thought that that was one of the most tremendous games we've watched, right?
Yeah.
It's probably, you know, top two or three games of the entire weekend.
It'll probably end up a top five game this season, I think.
Yeah, and then we get to this week, and I feel the same way. Like, this Bills-Dolphins matchup it's like spectacular. Mm-hmm. I am so excited to see these two teams kind of battle at it. Do you think that Thursday night football, that the NFL may have figured it out? Because, you know, a couple of years ago when it first started, remember we had all the games where it was like, there were 17 punts in this game.
It was essentially Jags versus Titans, it felt like, every Thursday.
Yeah, it was just, and not the good Jags.
Yes.
And not,
it was the mustard uniform Jags.
Yeah, and maybe a better Titans team, but nothing like saucy. They were like, we watched Travis Henry carry the ball 32 times.
Mm-hmm. Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry, sorry. Yeah, that's what it was like. It wasn't good football. Right?
Yeah, I feel like they're starting to do better with the matchups, but I don't think Thursday night football could ever be fixed. It's too short of a turnaround time from Sunday to then. Like, guys are going to be banged up. Like, Mostert's already not playing. HN is a game time decision. I think he'll play, though. But it's just guys that are dealing with stuff on Sunday, they're more than likely probably just not going to be ready by Thursday. They're going to have to play through injury. Like, it's always going to be guys are just, like, it's not enough turnaround for them to get healthy enough and all that. You know, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, this is how I would fix it. Number one, if you have Monday night and then a bye, or if you play on Monday night, you play the next Thursday night.
Yeah.
Not that Thursday.
Not that Thursday, but yeah.
Okay.
So you'd get a bye for the next week, you're saying?
Yeah, so you get a bye.
Yeah, yeah.
I also think that having teams coming off a bye play on the Thursday night game the next week would be better.
Because I think that's why, too, Chiefs versus Ravens look so good. I mean, both of these, like, they're fresh.
Yeah, I don't want to see players get injured, mm-hmm. right? And that's, for me, that's always the biggest thing. I don't want to see players get injured, and I think if you're compressing the time frame, I think you're right. So that's one way I would just play, use the bye week, or again, if a team plays on, maybe if they play the back-to-back, like if they have a Sunday, Thursday, then don't have them play again until the Monday.
Yeah, you got to give them some type of time at least.
Yeah, there has to be some sort of break. Yeah. But either way, I think the brand of football all of a sudden is much better, and I like the fact that we do have a midweek game.
Mm-hmm.
I always worry, especially when you're trying to expand to 17 and then 18 weeks. I'm always worried about the player's safety and player's health.
Quick question: how do we feel about Patriots Jets next Thursday?
Why are we just doing AFC? And
it goes Cowboys Giants after that, and then we got Bucks Falcons. Week 6 is 49ers Seahawks. Ew. Week 7 is Broncos Saints.
Oh,
that's disgusting.
Well, that by that point,
NBA
that
might be back. Well, preseason.
That might be a good game though. Like by that point, I don't know. I'm kind of looking at the Broncos and going, huh? They played some defense. Kind of looking at the Saints and like, hey, did you see what they did to Carolina?
We'll check back in week 7.
We will. We'll check back. I'm not looking forward to watching Daniel Jones play on Thursday night or Monday night or
it's
on
time
any Sunday.
For Daniel Jones to take that walk to back up quarterback stardom.
Yeah, he is like a giant bobblehead. Uh-huh. Like he's just like a moving target that just gets blasted. Okay, so look, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we have some Pac-12 revival news to talk about. Also, DeMar DeRozan's book comes out today, and Adam Silver sort of dropped a little bit on the potential for expansion, which I think a lot of people have been waiting for. So we're the Insiders. I'm James. He's Jesse. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to the Insiders. I am James Hamm. Joining me today, Jesse Tapia.
I just realized I threw in the D'Lo on KC rejoiner and not the Insiders one.
You did.
I was like, you were looking. I was like, wait, what's going on?
I was all thrown off.
That's my fault. Eat me.
All thrown off there. Like, huh.
I get too used to like my system and stuff like that.
Even the music. I'm like, I don't know this music.
Yeah. That's eat me.
See? Look at that. We had our first mistake of the day. It happens. Jesse, we had some news last night. Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports is reporting that there's an attempt for the Pac-12 to come back.
Yeah, I saw that.
So they're talking right now. The Pac-12 is a two-team conference with Washington State and Oregon State. I don't know why they're not called the Pac-2. I mean, that just seems
kind of dormant right now.
I guess so. The Pac-12, they're targeting Boise State, San Diego State, Colorado State, Fresno State as new additions in a reimagined Pac-12. Again, by my math, that's not 12 still.
No, yeah, so they're looking to add like 4 more teams or something like that. It might be the Pac-10 at some point or something like that.
Yeah. So some of the issues, though, is the Mountain West, I guess there's like to get these guys out of contract to go to the Pac-12 is
I think it's
money.
A $17 million fee to leave in the Pac-12 for every team. They still have to pay 10 to 12 million, I believe.
Yeah, so you're talking about like basically like close to 30 million bucks for each of these teams to join the Pac-12. Do you think there's enough value there for this to happen?
Like, what do you mean value?
Like for these teams, like there's got to be some sort of television deal, but to move into a conference that is basically defunct at this point.
Like, I don't think, like, it's going to be a lesser conference. It's not like the Pac-12. Like, it won't be thought of as that.
Okay.
Like, you're not going to get an automatic bid, I think, or anything like that, like, for winning the conference or for the, yeah, whatever that is. So, like the Pac-12 will be back, but I'm not sure, like, it won't. It's literally Mountain West 2.0, kind of.
Okay. No, I think that that's fine, right? But I also think this might open opportunities for other teams, including Sac State, right?
Yeah, if we get them into the actual Mountain West.
Yeah, so the Sac State in a reimagined world could potentially move into something like the Mountain West, right? Are they ready for that?
They're ready as far as like the ability to play with those guys, but everything else, no.
Okay, like stadium.
I don't know. It's Mountain West. Like San Jose State. I was talking to my buddy this morning. Like, San Jose State Stadium is not like this amazing thing or whatever. Like Sac State is not much different from it. So maybe they do, but you need more money and stuff like that. I think.
Okay.
Yeah, like you need to kind of do it up a little bit more.
I think you're going to need a television deal.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to need a better television, which, of course, I think that's something that would come with taking a leap forward, right? Either way, I think it's interesting. We'll kind of see how it all goes as far as expansion, whether that actually happens as far as the Pac-12. We also, DeMar DeRozan's book comes out today, Above the Noise. I have a copy on the way, so I haven't read it, and I've tried to avoid like a lot of the DeMar DeRozan like conversation around it, like the media tour, because I kind of want to read the book on my own. But this is kind of cool. Like,
it's been a fun offseason for the Kings. Like, yeah. DeMar's kind of doing his thing out, making the rounds. Fox is in China with Steph, and then Sabonis, like we were talking about yesterday, he's got his Netflix doc. It's like, all right, the Kings are out there a bit.
It feels like that for one of the first times ever, the Kings are actual part of like different national conversations,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Not like a forced way, almost like a way in which
like it's just everyone else. It's like how the other teams when they get their players. It's just like you said. Just I think that's the thing. It just feels so weird because it's just normal.
It feels like they're getting respect in a different way than they would than Sacramento Kings normally get respect. So I'm here for it. I'm excited to see again what this adventure in China means for De'Aaron Fox, because like just the videos are just wild. Everywhere they go, they're just superstars.
Yeah, Fox isn't, from how he comes off, isn't the type where he's going to like really like fight for like fans to be on his back. But if you do stuff like this can only help and stuff like that. I think that's the best way for him to go about it, I guess.
You know, in a certain way, while I've never thought that that Steph is as snarky as De'Aaron, they are similar.
In what ways do you think?
They're similar in that they're both sort of introverted, like mild-mannered, quiet guys behind the scenes.
Yeah.
They're not like big rah-rah guys, but they're also, you know, everyone always says, oh, is Fox a leader? You know, you got to get this guy. And it's like, hey, it's the same thing. Like Draymond's always been the leader, but the best player has mm-hmm. always been Steph, and he leads by example. I think Fox does that too.
I don't buy into that whole you got to yell to be a leader type stuff. If De'Aaron Fox is putting up 28 and just being a monster, then everyone else needs to follow suit.
No, I agree with you. I agree. So either way, I'm down with it. I think it's cool. And I've said this a million times already. I can't wait for the Sabonis Netflix doc.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. We're going to see maybe some personality from Domas.
I think...
He's a quiet guy. I get it.
I think there is a lot of personality there. Like, we see a little bit of the jokester, the funny guy, the good teammate thing that I think gets glossed over that people miss. He brings like an intensity, but also he is always willing to laugh. He is funny, and I think some of that will come across. And then the family stuff,
I feel like we'll see a little bit more from, because like he'll be like his own little element, like you say, he'll be like with his families and stuff like that, just kind of following like Domas a day in the life, I guess.
No, I think so. So I don't know, we'll see. Both Sean Cunningham and I actually like sat down for interviews for it, so we'll see if we actually make the final cut. I doubt we will, but
Netflix is James Hamm.
That's right. Outside of that, we also have this this interesting tidbit from Tim Bontemps of ESPN relaying that the idea has always been Before the NBA will discuss expansion, they want to see what happens with the television deal and the CBA. Sort of like the CBA needed to get done, it got done. The television deal needed to get done, it got done. And while the NBA has not discussed expansion yet, they do plan on discussing it this season at some point with the owners' meetings and stuff. Where are you at with expansion? And like, it kind of feels a little bit like this is a foregone conclusion.
I think it is. Like, maybe they haven't formally talked about it, and I put that in quotes, but like, they know what the plan is and what's going on. They needed steps, like you said, with the media deal and all that, the CBA and all that. But like, yeah, we're getting expansion, no doubt. Like, they have to probably say like these things. I don't know if it's because of legal or whatever. Just there's a process to go about it. But yeah, we're getting expansion, I think.
Now, in order to get an expansion team, I don't know what the expansion fee is going to be, but my guess is going to be between $2 and $3 billion for an expansion fee, which is like astronomical.
It's insane how much money gets thrown around in these professional leagues.
Isn't it crazy? Even like when the Seattle situation happened with the Kings, they were trying to buy the Kings and move them, but the valuation was like $535 million.
Hey,
right?
check it out. I'm looking at it right now. Various reports put the expansion fee at around $4 billion.
Oh,
yes, $4 billion. But some consultants expect it to be closer to $5 billion because of competition and rising broadcast rights revenue.
Well, that makes sense.
Break out the pocketbook or the checkbook.
That's going to be crazy. So I do believe, like, they kind of centered on two cities that they're going to expand to.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to go back to Seattle, and there's some discussion as to whether, like, Key Arena, the old Key Arena, which has had a couple of facelifts since the NBA left Seattle following the 2007-2008 season, but whether it's still an NBA arena or whether it needs to, they'll need a new arena in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that that Las Vegas is the other logical choice. I've been harsh on baseball in Las Vegas. I'm not harsh on football in Las Vegas. I think football in Las Vegas is perfect because you can go there for a weekend, have a great Friday, have a great Saturday.
Yeah, it's a trip.
You make yourself out of bed by 1 o'clock in the afternoon on mm-hmm. Sunday and somehow make it for a game. I don't get baseball. Like, no one's going to Vegas for a 3-game set.
Yeah, I'm not going for a midweek series with the A's and the Tampa Bay Rays.
No.
Yeah,
no,
it's just not happening.
I don't think anyone is, and I don't know that the community can support it either.
Yeah, that's the thing. In order for that to work, you're going to really need, like, the Vegas people to buy, and it can't just be like how we see with the Raiders. Opposing fans are always here and stuff like that. It's not going to work that way.
I totally agree, and that's, I think it's going to be a bit of a disaster, and we'll get to, there is a little bit of A's news that we'll get to later in the show, but then I also kind of feel like the NBA is waiting a little bit for, like, the LeBron moment.
I think so, too.
I think that team in Vegas will be LeBron's.
He's been lined up with John Henry, Fenway Sports Group, I think it is, or whatever, he owns Liverpool, the Red Sox, and all that stuff. They've been kind of, like, getting their ducks in a row for this Vegas team, I think.
I think they are, too. Yeah. And I think they want LeBron to be the face of it. I think the league wants LeBron to be the face of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that there's going to come a point where he can't be the face of a team that he's not playing for. And so you're going to have to wait until he retires. So it's almost like we're checking off the boxes. Like,
we get a Michael Jordan situation. We get LeBron playing for the Las Vegas, whatever they're going to be called, after owning them for a bit.
Oh, that wouldn't be fun. I don't know. LeBron.
We need to talk more about Michael Jordan playing for the Wizards. I feel like we don't bring that up with him. I'm not talking about now, but that happened.
It happened, and not only that, but he had taken, like, it was like 3 years later.
Yeah, yeah.
He came back and played, what, 2 seasons?
I think it was 2 seasons, yeah.
Yeah, just absolutely wild.
Yeah, that happened, people. Your GOAT played for the Wizards.
He did. He finished with the Wizards, just like Patrick Ewing finished with the Seattle Supersonics.
That's tough. I think Hakeem Olajuwon was with the Raptors at one point.
Raptors, finished with the Raptors. I think he only played for the Rockets and the Raptors.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's wild. I mean, we all know, like, the way that Karl Malone jumped ship and went to the Lakers to finish his career. I don't know. I just the title chasing at the end of your career is weird. I don't think that's what this would be with LeBron. But I also feel like Seattle, I'm excited for Seattle to get a team.
It's about that time for them.
It was brutal watching the whole thing. And I think this is part of David Stern's legacy. And now Adam Silver has a potential to make this sort of part of his legacy to bring Seattle, bring basketball back to Seattle. But he's still going to want a public partnership. public-private partnership, which is why they left in the first place.
Yeah,
interesting stuff. All right, Jesse, let's step aside. When we come back, we're going to dive into this Hoops Hype Top 100 and where the Kings came out. These lists, some of them you love, some of them you hate. This is a good one. I think Hoops Hype did a good job here. So I'm James. He's Jesse. We're the Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320. We'll be back in just a sec.
Now, back to the Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back into the Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. I'm James. Jesse Tapia joining me today with Kyle Madsen out for the next couple of days. Jesse, when we were going through show prep, you brought up the Hoops Hype Top 100. And we've gone through a bunch of these lists, whether, you know, NBA or NFL Top 100s. And I think each of them have their like, certain amount of value, except for the 2K. I thought the 2K rankings, when we had that discussion, were just trash.
I can't buy into video game rankings, like even the Madden stuff.
Yeah, I just thought they're just so ridiculous, and it's like,
if you don't like it, just pump up the rating. You can go in and change it or whatever. That's the one I just
I kind of feel like, Jesse, that when people who are like writing these lists, right, when they're basketball people, it makes sense. When they're like computer programmers that are deciding what someone's rating is,
yeah,
I don't think that makes sense.
Yeah, you're wrong. I'm going to change this. De'Aaron Fox is a 92, and we're going to move on.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, be fair, be reasonable, like be balanced. Look at what other players do that this player does or doesn't. Look at speed ratings. Look at steal ratings. Like all, like the stats are there. It doesn't seem like it should be that hard.
I wonder how much of it is like marketing, in a sense. Oh, we're going to piss some people off today, and
I think it's all marketing.
Yeah,
I think it is.
Real quick, too, we got our talk line sponsored. You can call us today on the Elk Grove Kia talk line, 916-909-1320. We're taking calls today. I'll slide you down if I have to, but
we're taking calls. Jesse's taking calls.
Yeah, I'm handling the calls. Don't worry, James, I got it.
I'm not taking calls. I do see the red button that like I can just like delete whatever happened, but yeah, if you guys
I got a dump too, don't worry. Yeah.
You can call it. Yeah, I'm going to let you handle all of this.
I got it. Don't worry. Like I said, the Elk Grove Kia talk line, 916-909-1320.
Yeah, very excited to have Elk Grove Kia join the program.
We're on the come up, James.
Sponsor. We are on the come up. Next thing you know, we're going to have a studio sponsor.
And you know how long me and Charlie have been fighting for the talk line to be sponsored?
Oh, yeah. We did have it sort of sponsored for like a small amount of time.
I remember that.
Yeah. We don't need to say the sponsor name. Anyway, when we're going through the first king that shows up on the Hoops Hype Top 100, and I'm not sure, I didn't, hang on, let me scroll to the top of the page. Who is it that wrote this? We have friends of the program, Frank Urbina and Raul Barragan. There we go.
Shout out Frank and Raul.
Yeah, there we go. That's who broke down all the Top 100. These guys are in it. Like they are, the Hoops Hype guys are like fully dedicated basketball people. And Michael Scotto is a friend of the program. You know, actually someone I text with quite often. Good dude, knows his stuff, knows basketball. And there's some things. So number 20 is Domantas Sabonis. And there's something that he says that they put in the write up here. And it says that if he didn't peak in the era of Jokic, Sacramento Kings big man Domantas Sabonis would be seen as one of the best playmaking centers of all time. He's putting up 7 assists per contest over the last 4 seasons. That's no easy feat for a center. We've just become desensitized to it due to the Jokic utter playmaking brilliance.
I don't like that, James.
You don't like that?
You can acknowledge both of them.
I
get the whole Jokic thing, but I don't get the whole not giving Sabonis credit because, oh, we've seen Jokic do it. And I'm not even having an issue with this, whoever wrote it or whatever, but it's just more so like you can acknowledge both. Like Sabonis is not Jokic, but what he's been doing is amazing too.
No, I get it, but I think I have a way of breaking this down that might make sense.
Okay.
Right? What they're saying here isn't that Sabonis isn't a great passer or a great playmaker, but I'll point out that, you know, Vlade Divac, one of the great passers of all time for a big man, right? Mm-hmm. There's no question. Like what Vlade could do as a passer was just the back cuts, the crazy stuff he would do. Arvydas Sabonis as well. Like, Arvydas Sabonis would just palm the ball and then move it all around and then hit like dimes all over the place. Vlade took it to another level because he was able to sustain for such a long time, right? And then the Kings were able to go out and find another great passing big man in Brad Miller.
Yeah.
And I know this is going to sound a little strange, but Vlade and Jokic, as far as passing, were very similar. Flashy, amazing, like pump fakes that some guy will look away and then all of a sudden he's throwing some crazy pass, right? I think Vlade's passing ability got overshadowed a little bit by the fact that Jason Williams was on the team. And did like some of the most insane things.
Yeah, we see the highlights every year, all the time.
Yeah, yeah. But on top of that, Chris Webber was a great passer as well. Chris Webber was not as good a passer as Vlade. He wasn't a highlight reel passer like Vlade, just like Brad Miller. So Brad Miller was like a utilitarian center. Like he's like a dude who could do just about everything you needed. It might not look amazing, but it was very, very effective. And I think the way that Jokic passes reminds me a lot more of Vlade, where you have some flashy, you have some crazy stuff that he does. And the way that Sabonis passes is so systematic and it's so like refined, but there isn't like a bunch of crazy highlight reel stuff.
I got you, yeah.
And that's where I would put him in the same line as like Brad Miller. Great passer, great vision, great ability to run an offense, but the flashy guy is always going to be the guy who gets talked about.
I get that, but it's also like, you kind of said it. Like, if it wasn't for Jokic, like, we'd call Sabonis one of the best playmakers. So just call him that.
No, he is.
Yeah, so just say it then.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I think by saying it this way, they're saying it, but I'm with you. There is a certain amount of respect that should come with being the passer that Sabonis is.
Yeah.
And
you don't got to say he's better than Jokic, but you don't have to also say, like just acknowledge what it is and let's go.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of it there, you hear people say, well, he does a DHO. That's not really, it's like, okay,
but all right, it is, man. Yeah.
But it counts, you know, like we're not trying to make up a stat like screen assist that, you know, like the Gobert screen assist that Quinn Snyder used to pitch every time you saw the Utah Jazz and every time Quinn Snyder got a mic from me. Did you see that Gobert had 14 screen assists tonight? It's like, well, no, because that's not a stat. It's not on any box score anywhere. And then you look and, you know, Sabonis is like just the best screen assist guy in the league. But it's also, he actually gets assists for what he's doing because he has the capability of holding on to the ball and actually making the play. So I get what they're saying here. And I also think number 20 in the league, I don't hate that for a rating for Sabonis.
No, that's solid, I think.
I think it's fair. You know, there are players who are more athletic that score more than Sabonis, and players who score more are always going to be rated higher.
And the way that Hoopsype does these rankings too, real quick, like for context, is like it's who they expect to be, like take steps forward and all that. So like I saw Cade Cunningham was like 35 on this list, and he might not be the 35th best player right now, but they're expecting him to kind of take that jump.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so that's, yeah.
Okay. They do have the player right before Sabonis, of course, is Ja Morant. Ja Morant, lightning in a bottle. The problem is that it gets extinguished and itself, you know, he's done so much damage to himself out there that you hope that he can get his career back on path and that the shoulder's okay and all that stuff. But I don't hate him at 19. I still think he's a great player. Jaylen Brown at 18, that's fine. Donovan Mitchell at 17. If you're in the range with these players, that means you're a pretty good ball player.
These are elite players right here.
Yeah, they're all elite players, and I think having Sabonis in that conversation is really good. Number 21 is Damian Lillard. Number 22 is Zion Williamson. I think it's too high for both of those players, to be honest with you.
I think you're right, too.
It's unfortunate, but like Damian Lillard, like he can't keep up the way that he used to. His shooting numbers have dipped, and he's never been a good defender. And we saw what happened to their defense the second that they made the trade last year to acquire him, Milwaukee, that is. And then Zion, like, Zion is a phenomenal player, and he tore up the Kings all season long. And if we want to sit here and talk about how, you know, Sabonis is 10-0 all time against Anthony Davis, you can talk about the fact that the Pelicans were, what, 6-0, and I think Zion played in four of those games.
I feel
games.
Like we're still waiting on him. Like, he's a great player and all that, but we're still waiting for, I don't even know what the word is, but just more so, like, if it's a jump or just something, I think.
I think you're waiting for him to play more than 50 games.
That could be it, too.
I mean, that's the biggest problem. He can't stay healthy. And, you know, again, talk about, like, self-inflicted wounds, a lot like Jaw. Like, he doesn't have all of the off-court issues.
I think Zion lacks maturity.
Well, he does, but he also lacks, like, self-control and an understanding of what his play style does to his body and how his body and his play style, like, will never match up unless he does the extra work to become, like...
You gotta want to take it... I don't want to say he doesn't take it serious. I don't want to say about NBA players, but, like, just... take that extra step, I guess.
Well, it's hard, though. I mean, you're a multimillionaire.
Mm-hmm.
You're in New Orleans, which is, like, one of the great food capitals of the world. I mean, the food in New Orleans is so off the charts good, like, everywhere you go. And, you know, he's a guy who is always going to struggle with weight. And it's, like, they have a clause in his contract that he can't... his weight and body fat combined can't be more than, like, 295. And there's no way for that to happen.
You always wonder if New Orleans was the right place for a guy like Zion. Like, if they were going to be able to handle that. I don't think they've been able to.
No, I don't think...
I don't think it's all Zion. I think it's the organization, everything that kind of ties into with him.
No, I think so, too. It's, you know, like, even look at DeMarcus Cousins when he was here in Sacramento. DeMarcus struggled, especially when he was early, with his body. And he's grown through it. He's figured it out because over the last, say 5 or 6 years, you haven't really seen DeMarcus carry weight. The injuries caught up to him. And that's kind of what I fear for Zion, is that all of these injuries that he's had as a young player, and a lot of them are because he's not in the right shape, they will eventually catch up to him. And, you know, there's only so much wear and tear a body can take. And when you damage your knees, there's only so many times you can damage your knees or your feet, and expect to just be the same type of player and have the same type of like athleticism and everything else. And it, you know, it doesn't help that, you know, he's just a huge man. So, eventually, you know, again, we saw DeMarcus break down really, really young, like the Achilles, the quad, the ACL.
I felt like it happened also fast, too.
Yeah.
It was just one after the other after the other.
Yeah, really, really tough to watch. Yeah. So Zion Williamson at number 22. Number 23 is Paolo Banchero. I know what they're trying to do here, but I still don't like it because number 24 is De'Aaron Fox. And I know where Paolo's going to be as a player, mm-hmm. and I know the type of player that he is and what they hope that he will be, which is realistically, it's a Carmelo Anthony type of player. I think there's more value in De'Aaron Fox. I think he's a better defender. He does more. He's a better scorer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to base most of this on the fact that Paolo's going to be a great scorer, then you have to acknowledge the fact that De'Aaron Fox is already a much better scorer.
Yeah, like for the context of how they do these lists, I think I see it with Paolo. But I think, like, even after the season, De'Aaron Fox will still be a better player. I don't know if it's this year for Paolo or next, but, like, he's gonna blow up at one point. But as far as, like, going from Dame to Zion to Paolo to Fox, I think I'm switching Paolo and Fox to the front of that list, and I'm moving Dame and Zion back.
Yeah, I would have had...
I like Dame. Dame was dealing with a lot of off-court stuff last year. I think he's going to pick it up this year. But as far as just going into this season, I think Fox could be the better player.
Yeah, I mean, look, Damian Lillard, like, there's nothing you can do. Father Time is coming.
Yeah, he's like, 34, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's right there. Like, this is what happens. You age, your jump shot isn't as pure. You know, it's very difficult to keep up and to have your legs still be strong and, like, support you for, especially as a jump shooter, as you age.
Yeah, because if Fox is getting 26, 27 a game or whatever, and the Kings are near 48, 50 wins or whatever it is, like, he's gonna be thought of as one of the top point guards in the league.
No, I think so. I think so, too.
He's just kind of waiting on the winning at this point.
Yeah, I probably would, like, again, this is a little bit nitpicking, but I would have put Fox at 21, Paolo at 22, and then Dame, you know.
I don't hate that, yeah. I mean, Fox and Paolo, like, I'd put Fox ahead first, but you can talk me into Paolo going there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, winning is going to be the biggest question.
Yeah.
Like, do the Kings win this year? But then I look at the list and I say, okay, well, then why is Ja Morant 19?
Okay, yeah, so I got one for you. How much better is Jalen Brunson than De'Aaron Fox?
Oh, I mean, I think it's really, really close.
They're about the same player, right? You think? Not like just far as points per game. They're about the same tier, right?
Yeah, I think Fox is a better defender, I think.
I don't hate that, yeah.
And he's certainly bigger.
Like, yeah.
He's got him by like, you know, 3 inches.
Yeah, what I'm getting at here is Hoopstype had Jalen Brunson at 8th on this list.
Wow.
And that's what the wins do for you.
That is what the wins, and sort of like, but it's also, I would say the thing I like about watching Brunson is he just puts such a stamp on a game. Like, you know that Knicks team is Jalen Brunson's. And all the guys around him, it's almost like they've built not only his teammates from college, right? But they've put guys around him who are fiery, but they're also not the number one guy. They're never going to be the number one guy. Like, Mikal Bridges is not a number one. Dante DiVincenzo is not a number one. Josh Hart is not a number one. The one outlier is OG Anunoby is not a number one. They're all guys who are better as like two threes and even fours, right? Some of these guys. But then you have Julius Randle, and you wonder how that's going to look when Julius Randle's back, because
kind of feels like an odd man out.
It does feel like an odd man out situation. Like, they probably should have cashed in on him and tried to get something to fill one of the other spots on the roster.
Yeah, you would think so.
Yeah. I don't know. He's still a really good player, but I don't know how he fits in this system. So once we get past Fox, there are players here like Pascal Siakam is 25, Kawhi Leonard is 26, Paul George 27. So they have Fox rated above above all these guys.
Yeah.
Also, I'd point out they have Bam Adebayo at 28. So
that feels disrespectful a little bit.
It does. I feel like Bam should be higher than that.
Yeah.
Trae Young at 29, Jimmy Butler at 30. I haven't gone through the whole list as far as like this range of player, but you know, there are players like Karl Anthony Towns, Lauri Markkanen that are in the 30s that, you know, they could have an argument to be higher on this list. But getting back to the Kings, after this group, we have DeMar DeRozan at 45. Is that fair?
Let me tell you the players ahead of him first. He's got Kristaps at 44, Kristaps Porzingis, mm-hmm. and then Jalen Williams at 43. 42 is Jaren Jackson Jr. Right behind DeMar is Brandon Ingram, I believe. Yeah, Brandon Ingram at 46 and James Harden at 47. So if that's the range, I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
Is it interesting to you that Brandon Ingram's right there? Because I know a lot of Kings fans just like, oh my gosh, Brandon Ingram.
I think that's the guy. Fine. Like, Brandon Ingram's that type of player. I don't think I like Jaren Jackson, though, at 42.
Yeah, I you know, he did win Defensive Player of the Year 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And he was a hot mess last year. Like, that entire team was a mess, and, like, he's right at the forefront of, you know, they weren't able, I mean, there was a point where they had, like, an entire roster filled with, like, 10-day contracts and 2As and, you know, guys that they were literally picking up and signing off the street. I remember against the Kings, they signed someone. Like, we didn't even know they signed somebody, and we looked up and we're like, who's that? And sure enough, there's a dude on their roster that was not on their roster like 2 hours earlier. And it's like, okay, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I mean,
it happens, right?
Yeah, I think Jaren Jackson's good, but I got my eyes on him. But as far as like where DeMar DeRozan is, I think that's fine.
Okay, I think it's fine too.
And I have him ahead of Brandon Ingram, I think it's notable.
I think having him ahead of James Harden is notable too. Because, again, Harden got the big contract. He got the 2 year $70 million, where, you know, you got a 3 year $75 million or whatever it is for DeMar. It's $78 million, I think it is.
It's a great deal already now.
Yeah, I think it's already, like, comparatively, it makes, it's a better deal. And look at James Harden's stats last year. James Harden, like, declined big time.
Yeah, James is not, he's just not what he used to be. He's fine now. He's a good player and all that. Like, he's not trash, but he's just not the James Harden on the Rockets anymore.
Yeah. Let's see. After finishing top three in the Clutch Player of the Year voting each of the last 2 years, six-time All-Star DeMar DeRozan remains arguably the top mid-range assassin in the game today, a player at his finest getting throwback buckets from the area where the numbers say the least efficient baskets come from. I think this is a good spot for DeMar. And, you know, again, the Kings landed a player in free agency / via trade that averaged 24 points, 4.3 rebounds, 5.3 3 assists, 1.1 steals per game last season.
He hasn't really fallen off yet.
No, he hasn't fallen off at all. But, I mean, the Kings have never, ever, ever since they moved here 40 years ago, been able to sign a free agent that averaged 24 points and 5 rebounds.
Well, yeah, what have I told you, too? Like the Lakers, Clippers, Miami Heat, and Philadelphia 76ers were in on him, too, and he still picked the Kings.
Yeah, so that's where it gets crazy. And, you know, again, there's been a lot of DeMar DeRozan over the last couple of days, like all over the place. I know on ESPN, I think he said he thinks the Kings will be in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, that's what you're supposed to say, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of what you're supposed to say, but I want to see it. Like, before I'm going to anoint this team and say, hey, look, this is the team. You know, they do have to go out and win. I think last season there was a bit of a step, I don't know, like a plateau of sorts. And I think it's one of those things where they need to figure it out, right?
Yeah, but I also think, like, you're right, but also what they were missing was a DeMar DeRozan, I think. Like, that type of player.
No, I agree. I agree. And I would still contend that if Monk and Herter don't get hurt down the stretch, they win another 2 or 3 games and they're not in the play-in. They're the 6th seed. And they would have been able to make the playoffs. That's just the feel that I had for the team. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, last year was just, there was never a flow at all.
Yeah. I didn't think they were world beaters, but I thought that they were a good team mm-hmm. that deserved to be in the playoffs. And that's, you know, again, that's pretty crazy. Chester DeRozan in the chat says, Chester DeRozan Jackson, sorry. He'll bet me $1 that the Kings make the Western Conference Finals. I don't know.
I don't hate it. If we go through it, like right now, I think OKC is on its own tier. Well, on a tier above the Kings right now. Mm-hmm. Minnesota, maybe. Like, I really like OKC. I think they're the favorites to get out the West. But like, after OKC and Minnesota, it's like, Denver, do they really scare you at this point? They did a couple years ago, but at this point, like, do they like still have to like, strike that fear in you?
I think they should still strike the fear in you, but I don't. They're just not as deep.
They're more vulnerable, I'll say.
In a 7-game series, I think they're more more vulnerable.
And but, like just looking at the other teams, I think what keeps the Kings out of this conversation and just getting into the Western Conference Finals, they don't have the experience. They haven't been through that yet. But I think if you look on paper, like the roster is not far off from much else.
No, I would agree with you. I would agree with you. Okay, let's get to the last two Kings on the top 100. Number 82, Keegan Murray. And they say after a very promising rookie season, Sacramento Kings forward Keegan Murray took a slight step back in 2023-24, seeing his three-point percentage fall from 41.1% in his inaugural campaign to 35.8% last season. However, he's too talented of a scorer, specifically as a shooter, for us not to think his third season will look more like his rookie season as far as three-point accuracy. That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the rating is fair, and you look at the players around him. Again, you got Jaden McDaniels at 79. At 80 is Jeremy Grant. At 81 is Josh Hart. You know, Jonathan Kuminga is below him at 83. This is kind of a fair spot for him.
Yeah, I think so. I got an issue with the one right after, though. Not the one right after Keegan, but the other Kings player.
You have issue with Malik Monk being
84? Yeah, that's a little ridiculous, I feel. Like, if you just look at, I'm going through the list right now.
Okay.
I think, like, Kobe White is 70th.
Huh.
I think I like Malik Monk better than Kobe White.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I also look at Cam Thomas at 85, one step below.
Like, Josh Giddey is 72. I'm taking Monk over Giddey. I could be wrong.
No, I would take Monk. Giddey.
So, like, I think I got him at least 70th. That's 14 spots. Then Tyler Herro's at 69th. You can argue between the two. Like, they're both kind of, not, like, they're both impactful to their teams. Tyler used to be a sixth man of the year. Jalen Johnson is 68. Miles Bridges is 67.
Ooh, Jalen Johnson is 60. I'm not putting...
And then Fred VanVleet at 66.
I'm not putting Jalen Johnson above Malik Monk.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, Jalen Green's at 65, and maybe that's where it's like, okay, like we'll take Jalen over Monk.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to take the upside of Jalen Green, yeah. No question.
But I think Monk is way too far down the list.
Well, but I would argue, like, the upside of Jalen Johnson is, like, sure, there's huge upside, but there's no way to know what the upside will look like.
Yeah, and Malik Monk is here. Like, he's in his prime. Like, he's probably played the best basketball of his career last season, maybe. I couldn't be mistaken, but, like, he's kind of just hitting his stride now.
No, I totally think he did play the best basketball of his career. I think maybe he's limited because he's a sixth man, because most people believe he will come off the bench for the Kings this year. So that kind of puts a little bit of a twist to it. But where's Naz Reid in this list?
That's a good question. Let me see if I can go find Naz.
That's always my question. Like, where is Naz Reid?
Sixth man of the year, Naz Reid, because he started the last 13 games for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, and I'm going to guess that Naz Reid somehow is above these guys. And, like, look, I really like Naz Reid, but I don't get...
They got Austin Reeves at 63, if you're into that sort of thing.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Zach LaVine at 62.
And just straight up, I would take Malik Monk over Austin Reed, Reeves anytime.
Yeah, yeah.
Over Austin Reeves anytime. So maybe that's just because that's what we do here. We don't like Austin. I don't dislike Austin Reeves, but I don't understand how he's been elevated to a certain status so quickly.
He's a good player, but he's not like the third man on the team.
No.
He's a great role player.
Yeah. I would even say I don't think he can have the impact that Monk can have on a team. Naz Reid is 91.
Well, I guess we won.
I found him. Yeah. Yeah, like, look, I think to have four players in the top 100 is solid. You know, that's why the Kings needed to go out and get a DeMar DeRozan. And I think even the way that we look at this list, DeMar was, 46, right?
45.
They needed a player who was in the top 45 in the league.
Yeah.
They did. And that makes your two guys that are in the top 80 in the league, like, it helps them. It makes them more... like, lines them up better against the opponent.
Well, yeah, your five best players are lists or lists. Whatever you think of them is whatever you think of them. But, like, if nationally in the, if they think, like, the Kings have five top 100 players, like, that's solid.
Yeah. 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 So, interesting stuff. I definitely appreciate a list that's well thought out and sort of has, like, a realistic argument to it. And then, like, all of these things are subjective. Like, we do watch these players every day, so.
But you're wrong about Austin Reeves at 63.
Yes, outside of that, you know, again, I think Malik Monk is too low on the list. I think Keegan Murray is right about where I would have put him. I think, was it the ESPN list where Keegan Murray came in at 99th?
I'm not sure. I'll have to check back.
I think it was one of those lists where he came, that was way too low. There just aren't that many players that are better than Keegan Murray. Even if he just stays who he is, and averages 15.5, but gets his 3-point percentage back up to like 40 and plays excellent defense, he's still worth more than a lot of players that we're talking about here. So, yeah, interesting discussion. All right, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we've got hour number two. We're going to touch on the 49ers. We got some news there, or at least some talking points there. Sam Darnold, the 49ers, will face their former backup quarterback this weekend. We'll dive into that a little bit. We're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. See you in just a minute.